The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Heidi?
Imagine that. Imagine if the Leafs had like three goals in 30 seconds or something.
That wasn't happening.
I know it wasn't happening. You guys wouldn't have done that. But
it wasn't happening in that game. And Mike Babcock, to his credit, actually chastised his team for not stepping up on the big stage. So that wasn't happening that night. And I made the point during the show, the back-breaking goal was a Mitch Marner turnover. Dmitry Orlov made a great play on Marner, and it led to Kuznetsov taking the turnover and moving it up the ice to Jakub Vrána, and Vrána scored on a breakaway, and that was the backbreaker. That broke the Leafs.
Pierre, I was kidding about going out for dinner. I watched I watched most of it, and I was saying earlier in the show, I was transfixed by the Leafs' jerseys, and you know, on the one hand, it's like, man, there's a lot of white on white ice. I don't know if this is good for you guys, frankly, at NBC, but I'm kind of transfixed by it. I was paying more attention to how they looked on my television screen, my 4K television screen, than the actual game itself. What did you see right in front of you in that regard?
I thought it looked sharp for me, live and in color, but I wasn't watching it on a TV, and I thought the Washington Capitals sweaters looked fantastic. So I thought both looked good. The contrast at ice level was tremendous. I mean, it was really good. But I also know that, you know, from people I've heard from that it was hard to pick up on TV unless you had maybe a 4K or something that you're you know, watching it with. So I understand that too. But I talked to Rod before I came on here, and I told Rod, I said, this isn't about us older folks when they do that. This is about the millennial generation. It's about the younger generation, the ones that want to purchase uniforms and outfits, and so that's what this stuff is about. And I didn't design it, you didn't design it, it would be somebody that would be in a far different category that would come up with these designs.
Well, it looked kind of space agey to me, which I suppose is right where what they were looking for.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're looking for. So I mean, and we'll see, you know, I will never see the numbers, you probably won't, but I'm sure that they did brisk sales, you know, in terms of memorabilia. I'm sure they did.
What about the whole time, the whole, you know, all of what went down with the presentation, the outdoor game, and the historical venue that you were? What do you come away with?
A lot of emotion, a lot of respect for both the Canadian military and the U.S. military, the Navy in particular, in Canada and the United States. Your Superintendent Ted Slapshot Carter, who is a longtime naval aviator, a proud graduate of the Naval Academy. I spent a tremendous amount of time with him Friday, a lot with him on Saturday. Just a really proud man. I thought he carried the day. I thought he was fantastic. I thought the presentation of colors by both the Canadian and American military was outstanding. The national anthems from both countries. It was just an emotional thing, and I thought it was handled unbelievably well. And you know, I know you were making light of us having to move off the air off the big NBC, and that was because of the unfortunate blackout situation. And, you know, we couldn't control the winds, and you can't control and fight Mother Nature. And that's, you know, one of the things that led to that. But outside of that, I thought it was tremendous.
Yeah, most people should be aware. It was a major nor'easter that hit the northeastern U.S. Thursday night, Friday, and Saturday. So that was part of that.
Two blocks away from where I live in Connecticut, people still haven't had power since Friday.
Well, that's an indication of how serious it was.
And
hundreds of flights.
And I'm just telling you, when I was in, Rod, just so you know, when I was down in Annapolis on the first night, so I got there Thursday, I thought my window was caving in. In my hotel room. That's how bad it was. And then all the train service was stopped because they run on electrical wires. So all the train service was stopped on late Friday and all day Saturday.
Sounds like a scene from Inception. You guys seen that?
Oh, great film. Okay. Yeah,
Christopher Nolan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, go. Anyway.
So, outdoor game Saturday night. First outdoor game, Edmonton-Montreal, 15 years ago, 2003.
Right.
And you think Ted Leonsis, you think, of course, him being at the forefront of the internet age, of being a modern type of owner. Like, where do you think we'll be in 15 years, Pierre? Are we going to be into virtual reality, gaming, fast-paced? Like, where are we going to be?
What a good question. I was at that.
You're going to be in a rocking chair, I hope.
No, I don't want to be there.
No, me.
Oh, you.
Yeah.
Okay.
With a nice fire, maybe a mini Cigarello, and some fine single malt.
Okay. Okay.
Watching you try to explain what's going down.
Okay, that would be good. I'll come and find you when I'm done. 15 years I couldn't speak to, but I was at the Heritage game 15 years ago, and the outdoor games have changed significantly since then. I thought the standalone moment that still lives to this day was Jose Theodore and his toque, and it's been copied ad nauseum by a lot of different people, but nobody pulled it off like Jose pulled it off. So I think that's one of the things that I will always remember from that game. And ever since, they've gotten better because the ice conditions have gotten better, but it's still, it's unique. Next year, I can't wait to get to Notre Dame. You know, we got one at Notre Dame between Chicago and the Bruins. Can't wait to be there. I've said this for a million years, and I'm going to keep saying it, and I hope Mr. Molson's listening to this. They should play an outdoor game at Percival Molson Stadium in McGill. It would be one of the best ever held because of the way the stadium is built.
Yeah, there's just not enough seats.
Oh,
they,
yes,
they can build.
Are.
They can build.
Well, oh yes, there are more than enough seats. We had 29,000 at the Naval Academy the other night, and it was fine. If you could do Montreal, they could hold 30,000 people there with a rink. Absolutely, it would be. That's all you need. Be awesome.
Gallo, you spent a lot of time there. Can you picture an outdoor game there?
I can, but they would have to make a lot of major adjustments. Just
it's very primitive, the facilities there.
Exactly. Just like sitting there in November.
Stan Gendron was the coach there. I used to go to a lot of Alouette games there.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what the stadium is. But I think they should play a game there.
It's a little bit difficult on the fans when it gets cold on those seats, put it that way.
Well, that's why they have blankets. You're not sitting at the Bell Center.
And flasks.
Yeah, flasks, too. Remember that? Yeah, flasks, exactly.
You were going to ask Pierre something.
No, just because he was talking about Jose Theodore and the toque, and I was watching that game on Saturday, obviously, and Hopi looked pretty sharp. I know the Leafs didn't test him that much, but it was one of the better games I've seen Hopi play. Just wondering, Pierre, if you have any way of explaining the type of season that Holtby's had.
He didn't look that good early.
Shaky, though.
Yeah, he looked. He did not look good.
Shaky at the start. Milbury and I were talking about that on the air, and he was shaky, and then he got better. He started to reel it in as he got more and more comfortable with the elements. Freddie Anderson never got comfortable, obviously. He got pulled, and Curtis McElhinney, and he went in. But I would say this. He lost his goalie coach, and I don't know that's it has not been brought up enough. His goalie coach, Mitch Korn, kind of semi-retired from the Capitals. He's living down in Florida. He did a lot of great work with Pekka Rinne. He did a lot of great work with Thomas Volkoon. He did a lot of great work with a guy named Hasek when he coached in Buffalo. I mean, Mitch Korn's been around the league a long time, and he left after last season just to kind of semi-retire, and I think that's kind of hurt Braden Holtby, to be honest.
Jeez, if I'm Ted Leonsis, I don't care what it costs, I bring him back. Playoffs.
Believe it or not, he was back to work with Braden last week.
Okay.
There you go.
And this kind of shines a light on a hot topic around here. And there is no way to mask the kind of season that Carey Price had. And it might be done. We don't know. But, it's just Braden Holtby's numbers are not dissimilar to Carey Price's below mediocre numbers. And yet, look at the standings. I would hope, and the last time, I believe, Rod, you may be able to help me out, the last time we had an on-air conversation with Mark Bergevin, it was at the trade deadline a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and I asked him if this whole episode, losing Carey Price a couple of years, if it didn't kind of unmask the real fatal flaw the way this team is put together, that they rely so heavily on their goaltender to win them games, and he didn't see it that way. But here's an example in Washington. Braden Holtby's save percentage before the game on Saturday, maybe 2 points away from Carey Price at 904, 905, whatever it is. But they don't rely on him to win every game.
They can win games with Philip Grubauer. You know, that's exactly right. I'm backing you up 100% on that. What they do is they have good depth down the middle. Lars Eller's playing in the three hole, and we talked about that when they got him from St. Louis. I remember telling you. He is more of a bottom six forward than a top six, and that's what he's trending to be, and that's great. He's very good at it. You know, but they have Kuznetsov and Backstrom in the 1-2 hole, and they have Jay Beagle in the 4 hole. I mean, they're set to go. That's one of the things that why it masks the goaltending that hasn't been very good. Their center ice play is outstanding. And John Carlson's having a phenomenal year. They miss Nate Schmidt. I know people in Montreal don't want to hear this, but they miss Carl Alzner, too. They do. He and Carlson were a really good tandem. But Niskanen and Carlson on the right side are tremendous. They're really, really good. And Orpik's been a very honorable player on the left side for them. So, I mean, their defense is rock solid, and their center ice play is awesome. It's fantastic.
A few hours after we last spoke on Friday.
Now Barzal in the danger zone back there, weaving around in his own end, and stolen by Galchenyuk. Open net, and the hat-trick for Alex Galchenyuk, and the Canadiens lead it 6-3 with 49 seconds to go.
Yeah, great work by Galchenyuk. He doesn't give up on the forecheck. I believe that was against Tavares.
The Galchenyuk we saw on the ice in Brooklyn on Friday night is the guy we saw score 30 goals. And yep. It's just...
Agreed. Totally agree.
What would you do in the offseason? I know you... If you...
I would marry the guy. No, I mean, you know what that means in hockey parlance? He would be with us all the time. I would give him, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, relax, and then come back to town. We want to help you out. Let's do this, and let's spend some time together, and let's get this thing going, because we think you could be the guy that makes this grow over time. You're our guy.
But I'm not going to lie. I won't be one of the most vocal guys out there, but I got to go out there and play my game, and like you said, lead by example, and have great habits out there. And even though it's been a tough, difficult year, we got to still push forward.
All right. The thing is, you cannot pencil him in as you project ahead. You'd like to. And I believe he's at that stage in his career and in his life, frankly, where he's going to take off. I believe that.
But I felt that way for a long time. This is what I mean when I marry him. I want him to understand that the Montreal Canadiens are completely behind him. And one of the things, and I remember, Rod, when we talked about this with Mitch many years ago about leadership and creating an understanding of what the Montreal Canadiens' way is for leadership and utilizing assets, whether it be Guy Carbonneau or Pete Mahovlich when he's in town, or trying to get a Steve Shutt or Yvon Cornway, who lives not far from downtown. I want to get people that have understood the mantle of leadership as a Montreal Canadian and just mentor him and teach him and make him understand and appreciate what it means to be that person in that organization and the responsibilities that go along with it. And I think if you ever did that properly, I think you could really hatch something here with this player. He's that good. I really believe he's that good.
We were going through the roster and kind of some of the things we might be looking at over the next 17 games. And for some of the young players, it's obvious. But what about for some of the veterans, the youngish veterans? You just talked about Galchenyuk, but maybe for a Phil Deneau or for a Lehkonen or even for a Jonathan Drouin, how do you make the last 17 games of a lost season as meaningful as possible for a young veteran?
Oh, I've done it, and it matters a lot. I did it with Jeff Sanderson. Did it with Andrew Castles, did it with Chris Pronger. No, you have to do that. Now, we weren't out of it at 17 games. We went way deeper. We were close for a long time. But you have to make them understand this is all part of being professional. This is why you get paid. And I was very blessed to have one player in particular who I'll always really appreciate and admire, the late Brad McCrimmon, who is an amazing leader in our dressing room. And basically, I could give him ideology and he could transmit it to the players, especially Chris Pronger, who he was living with on the road at the time. So no, it was more positive than negative, and that's one of the things you do is trying to teach young players how to be pros, because every game counts. Every single game counts.
I know you tell us often to manage expectations, or that the organization has to manage expectations. So maybe what I'm going to ask is part that expectations were really high. But Pierre, just working the post-game shows and taking calls, the fans are really, really frustrated with Jonathan Drouin. And, you know, they have a point. He's been playing bad, and he's been playing lazy, and I think the results are there to show. But what can they do with Jonathan Drouin at this point? Rod mentioning, you know, the youngest veterans. He's one of the ones that has been struggling the most.
And that's why I would set up this leadership panel of great Montreal Canadiens of years gone by and try to make not just Jonathan but all the young ones understand what it means to be part of the fabric of an organization that is so critically important to the well-being, socially anyways, of an entire province. And I would say for sure the city of Montreal, it's that critical. And for whatever reasons, it's never been done, at least not lately it hasn't been, and I think it's really important. You know, when Bob was there, Gainey, he didn't have to do that because he had already tasted that. He'd already done it. He could take, remember that infamous walk he took with Alexei Kovalev in old Montreal? He could do that. You know, Mark has a nice career as a player in the league, but he wasn't a Montreal Canadian. So it's different, but that's when you have to rely on your people that have been around, and I think it's really important. You know, I look at one of the things that's really helped the Pittsburgh Penguins since 91 and 92. Younger players go in there, whether it be Jordan Staal, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and they learn the Penguin way. And whether it's Mario that's there, Mark Recchi, who's back there now, Rick Tocchet, who was there for the longest time, former Penguins that learn what it took to win in that philosophy, in that style. And the Penguins really did a good job with that, I'm telling you. And I think that would be an important part of something the Canadians could do because they got more than enough people around there.
Isn't there an opportunity right now, again, everything that we see over these final stretch of games is already the 2018-2019 season in mind. So with Pacioretty now likely gone for the season, wouldn't it make sense to shift Drouin to the wing and call up a centerman and let him play left wing for the rest of the season and get him in a comfort zone?
Oh, for sure. That's such a good point. It's so valid. That's why they won't do it. You know, it's because it wasn't their idea. It was your idea. This should have been done from the day they got him in the trade. Rod, go check what I said. Yeah. This wasn't going to work. It was doomed to fail. Put a person in a position to succeed, not to fail. And when they talked about him, number one, and the glowing terms that they were talking about him in, I was like, okay, I'll cede you that. He's got unbelievable upside and potential. But, you know, you couldn't...
Is that your alarm or a phone call?
No, it's an assistant general manager from an NHL team.
All right.
But I'm not going to take the call because I'm with you. Anyways, but this was doomed to fail. It was. And anybody that knew him, especially if you knew his body of work just from Lac St. Louis and John Goyens, just go check it out. It wasn't something that was hard to detect. Center ice wasn't going to work for him.
I don't remember, like, what I don't get is they're like, okay, we're going to put him on the wing. And remember they did it for a road game in Boston? They did it for a period?
A period and a bit.
Yeah.
That's it.
And then they put him back. It's like, why'd you do it for one period?
It's almost as if they discussed it and I don't know. I don't have an answer.
It goes back a long time ago. I don't know why it's like this with this group. You'd have to ask them. And I have no bone to pick with them at all. I hope they do well. Why did they draft Alex Galchenyuk, number three, if they weren't going to play him at center? What are they doing?
How about reading the text for us without telling us who it? All right, final one before we let you go, and you can return that phone call.
Panthers.
We're almost out of time here. The okay. Panthers did it again.
Yeah. First of all, Sasha Barkov. I think we talked about him last week. He's clearly gone to another level. Roberto, I'm so happy for Roberto, and if his family's listening in Montreal. Man, oh, man, has he stepped up. I'm so happy for Roberto. I really am. You know, he's near the tail end. Everybody knows that. He knows it. But he's doing a great job for their group. Mike Matheson's playing fantastic. So we got, you know, two Montreal tie-ins there that are doing really, really well.
Jonathan Huberdeau.
Yeah, and Jonathan's been good. He scored a beautiful goal yesterday. But Bobby Bugner, I think, it's taken a while for him to get his feet underneath as a head coach, but Bobby's a good coach. It's just taken him a little time. And I really like Dale. I think Dale Talon's a really good hockey person. So they've done a lot of things right compared to what last year was, which was as bad as it could get. That was just ridiculous what happened there last year, especially with Gerard Gallant. You talk about, that's a perfect example of turning the keys over to the car. To somebody that wasn't capable of driving it. You know, it wasn't appropriate, and I felt so bad for Gerard, but he's obviously landed on his feet. But I'm so glad Dale's back there, and They'll be fine. They're their team that, and they've got prospects coming. They got some good players coming.
Six straight win last night. Luongo with 39 saves. He's been absolutely lights out since he grabbed that microphone before the start of the game, their first game back after the shooting at Parkland where he lives. 4-1 win over the Flyers. They're 1 point out right now as we speak of a playoff spot.
Yeah, and the Flyers, you know, the Flyers gave up a ton. I was shocked yesterday watching that game. And watching the Flyers' defense get exposed down the middle of the ice, all four goals scored by Florida were stretch passes through the middle of the ice. That's just defensemen not paying attention. There must be some fatigue factor there. I'm going to Philadelphia tomorrow to do their game with Pittsburgh on Wednesday, so that'll be pretty interesting. But, you know, you look at their little soiree through Florida, they gave up 7 in Tampa. One was a shootout, and they gave up 4 in Miami or in Florida and Sunrise. Gave up 11 goals in 2 games. You know, that's a lot of goals. You're not going to win that way. And Philadelphia's better than that.
Good to see you on the full network for most of the game on Saturday night, Pierre.
You're mean.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're mean.
Ahead of the Habs and Devils in New Jersey.
I know. Now, by the way, Montreal better be ready for that game.